Introducing the Two-Way V4, where groundbreaking fuel cell technology meets fresh foam cushioning for the ultimate performance. With fuel cell, each step feels explosive, delivering unparalleled energy return. Paired with fresh foam, experience maximum comfort throughout the game. Its lightweight textile upper offers support and breathability without sacrificing agility. Whether you're hitting the clutch shot or locking down the opposition, the Two-Way V4 gives you the tools to play at a high level. Learn more and purchase the Two-Way for yourself at newbalance.com.
Welcome in to the Odds and Audibles podcast. I'm Matt Prehm, Eric Scopel, Jared Mack on the show. Welcome to your Friday edition of the show. Previewing number 4, Oregon at home against Stony Brook of the FCS level. The Seawolves, as they are called, are 1-1 coming into this one. Game will be played Pac-12 Network, 4:30 kick. Guy Heiberman and Shane Vereen,
yeah,
that's a name in the past that we've not heard in a long time, will be calling the game on TV. And guys, I think probably the most important thing I'm curious to see is how does this team respond from that 35-28 victory at Ohio State last week against, no offense to Stony Brook, a drastically inferior program, a team that probably Oregon's third string could play the primary, all the snaps, and still win in blowout fashion. Cristobal has been pretty vocal about it after Ohio State, a couple days leading up to this game, about how you prepare during the week for this game will ultimately be what decides, you know, if you're going to be a good team or an elite team. You have to treat every team the same. And, you know, I'm curious to see how this team performs because they've never had this much hype around them since probably 2015, 2014.
Not this early in the season.
Yes.
Because you go back to 19, they probably had this much hype, but it was end of season. And the, you know, at that point they had proven themselves because they responded to the Auburn game. But to win a big game like this early, no, you're right. They haven't had this sort of a preseason, early first September kind of, I shouldn't say first September. There's only one September, but a September kind of where they're ranked like this. So you're right, Matt. I think this is going to be telling. I think this week, next week, and even Stanford going into the bye are going to be big weeks to kind of learn more about this team. These are games Oregon's going to be favored by a lot in all three. You want them to cover those spreads and show kind of what we think they are because they've won two games, but both games have been won by one score. And of course, the perception of both those games are very different. People feel great. Just beating Ohio State was a monumental achievement. The way they beat Fresno State was probably a little disappointing. And Mario Cristobal has said that. And I think among the things he said that were interesting this week about kind of regrouping and turning the page was the point he made of the last time he played at home in front of our fans. And again, this is the first time in a year that the fans have watched. We didn't give him a very good show. He said it was a hot and cold performance against Fresno State. That was the thing he said earlier this week. And he's right. I mean, they were really good for a quarter and a half early. Played crappy for a while after some guys got dinged up and left the game and then finished strong to win. They need to be much more consistent in this game. And I think they will be. You know, we'll get to a lot of our predictions and stuff. Spoiler, we're thinking Oregon's going to win this game. and for good reason. But no, I think we will learn a little bit about, we saw the resolve and the resiliency to go win a big game. Now we'll see what they do when there's added expectations.
Yeah, it's going to be a fun one. I really do think that Cristobal is going to keep them like at this same level of just trying to, you know, have an excellent season. Yeah, it's going to be an interesting development to see how they do come out of the gates. Like, are they going to come out of the gates just thinking that they're all that and they just came off an Ohio State win and they're just going to, you know, kind of keep the pedal relatively quick and just, you know, do what it needs to be done to beat Stony Brook, which isn't a whole lot. Or are they going to come out and, you know, be up 30-10 by halftime and just make this game, you know, completely out of sight. And then, you know, the backups, third stringers play the rest of the half. So I'm interested to see that. You see teams all the time come out from a big game, big win, or even just playing another team above their competition level better. And the next week they just fall flat on their faces. We saw that with Florida State. They lost to Notre Dame, took Notre Dame to overtime, the top 10 team in the country, come out flat as heck against Jacksonville State and lose. So in this situation, obviously Oregon wins the game over Ohio State, but you want them to play with that same competitive edge that they did against Ohio State. against Stony Brook, against Arizona, against Stanford and everybody else. So that's what I'll be looking for the most. I think Coach Cristobal can it usually keeps his team to that higher level of just like being the better team, keeping up to the competition level of where they were before. So I'm looking to see if Oregon just blows the top off the playbook on their first drive of the game and just sends a message.
I don't necessarily think this game needs to be one in which, like, it's a disappointment if they score fewer than 60 points. Like, I could see Oregon scoring in the low 40s and it still being a positive outcome for Oregon. There's no real line on this one. The sportsbook that we use does not have one. I have seen some offshore accounts link it at like 42. And knowing that Oregon's banged up, and we'll get to those injuries here in a second, knowing that Saturday night in Eugene, there could be like an inch of rain that falls, which is much needed for the area. And knowing that Oregon's playing Stony Brook, and they don't need, you know, they've shown a lot against Ohio State, but they don't need to show more of it. You know, it wouldn't surprise me in the slightest if Oregon's in that 40 range from a score standpoint. That being said, that like you can still have a poor performance by playing, you know, and scoring 70 points. It's how sloppy is it? You know, you're having to execute on third and longs a lot, or are you efficient in getting yourself in a situation where you don't face third down very often? Or if you do, it's a third and short. You know, those are the types of things I'll be looking at to see how this team performs. Do they get off the field on third down? Do they force third and longs? You know, what kind of first down, you know, situations do they win on first down when they're on defense? That's the type of stuff I'll be looking at, less than the score, because I think this game could turn to a 70-10 victory, but it wouldn't surprise me either way as well if it's a 42-13 type win as well for Oregon.
Yeah, we'll obviously get into score predictions later, but I will say I think Oregon's going to play a lot more players in this game, and just in terms of tempering expectations in terms of the final result. If you play a lot of freshmen who haven't played before, even if you're playing inferior competition, I mean, like Matt made up a point earlier. I do think like Oregon's third string could probably beat Stony Brook, and I don't know if it's a super blowout, but it's probably not super competitive. Like Oregon's a lot more talented across the board. But those guys have never really played before, and this is their first. I mean, that's where those sloppy plays could happen. I mean, you could see a situation where you see second string offensive players out there, maybe Ty Thompson or Robbie Ashford or Jay Butterfield, whoever it is the second string quarterback. And with him at the helm, I'm not saying they're bad players, but a mistake could happen. It could be a mistake that's not directly their fault. It could be a center, you know, an exchange with the center that's wrong. It could be, you know, a pass that's deflected because he doesn't have a whole lot of experience with the receiver, and the ball goes in the air and it gets intercepted and goes the other way. I mean, there could be sloppy play just from a lack of experience perspective. So I would say tuck that part away. But all in all, I am curious and excited to see, I think, a much cleaner football game from Oregon, period. This is an opponent you should be able to beat handily. And it's an opponent where you want to see now in your third week cleaner play. That was the big talking point after the Fresno State game for the offense was cleaner offense. And I think we saw that a lot against Ohio State. But there were certainly other points that you could – and this is one of the things Cristobal has said, other places that need to be cleaned up too. So I expect them to be playing a cleaner football game. I take Cristobal, especially at his word of like, it means something to us that we play good football in front of our fans because this community deserves that. They have motivation here other than – hey, we got to win this football game. It's, you know, it's Stony Brook. We got to keep going for a national, you know, playing for a college football playoff spot, et cetera. There's also like kind of an internal, I think, motivation here just built into what it means locally for this game.
No, Eric, I agree with you. I'm just looking for like what you guys have mostly said, the offensive execution and just, you know, the points in this situation don't really matter. Should be a blowout win no matter what. Offensive execution, if they can carry how they did in Ohio State to Oregon, I think they'll be just fine. They want to be able to put in their second and third stringers in this game, give those guys a chance to make a run. If they mess up, if there's poor execution there, so be it. But at least they're giving them the opportunity where down the line, if an opportunity presents itself for one of these guys to come into the game, they'll have some experience. They'll see some of the playbook. So so execution, just experience for the younger guys. That's all that should come out of this.
And Jared brings up the next segue to backup quarterback. This is a game in which Oregon needs to get whoever it is. And Cristobal has said that there is a number two. The team knows who the number two quarterback is. They will just release that at a later date. He said, get it to us. That is code for when we send out player blank to take second team reps is when we'll be getting that information.
That's when we get it. Thanks, Mario. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But nonetheless, I think it's Robbie Ashford. Some days I think it's Ty Thompson. I think, Eric, you're pretty confident it's Ty Thompson. But it's going to be interesting to see who that number two guy is, because that kind of sets the tone for 2022 going this far out.
My confidence isn't like that high with Ty Thompson. That will tie into a prediction that would make that I've already made on Scope Adamas, my weekly prediction story, which is that Ty Thompson will be the second quarterback. I don't think that's a foregone conclusion. I just been pretty dang confident. It's an educated guess based upon everything we've seen and heard. And I know it's been brought up before when we watch Oregon in the pregame. It has not been Ty Thompson, the second guy getting snaps from center. I don't know if that's an intentional diversion or not. And if it's not, then I'd probably look silly by picking Thompson, because it's been, I think, Robbie Ashford both weeks, or was it Jay Butterfield in Columbus, Jared?
It was Robbie Ashford both weeks.
Yeah. So that there's the argument for, hey, maybe it is Robbie because he's been the second guy there. I will also say Robbie Ashford wears the same number that Jalen Redd wears. They both play offense. You can't do that. So mm-hmm. unless Robbie Ashford shows up on Saturday in a different number, or Jalen Redd shows up in a different number, Robbie Ashford can't enter the football game. So at least not on offense. So that's one of those things I think in pregame to kind of monitor. It will be monitoring of, okay, has there been a jersey change? Because if there hasn't been, that would indicate to me at least that we're not going to see Robbie Ashford play.
And there has been a jersey change with Ty Thompson.
Yes. Yep.
He's now 17. So that's what leads me to believe that Ty is the second string quarterback. I genuinely have no idea. It's been very strange. And from when we were able to watch fall camp and fall practices, we basically had no idea. Because 1 week, you know, Anthony Brown just wouldn't throw. And then, you know, Robbie Ashford was all of a sudden taking first team reps. We saw the first scrimmage of the fall camp where Ty Thompson was taking a lot of reps with the first team. Did really well. It's been played very close to vest for Oregon and their quarterback situation. That being said, I still think Ty Thompson is probably the first guy off the pine if we see a second stringer on Saturday.
Tuesday night football.
Yeah, I don't know why Tuesday was on the brain right there.
That's like it's never ever football, by the way.
Right. Not even the Mac is Tuesday.
Yeah.
Would we want to see – well, I think we're allowed to do this. Oregon gets into a position where the second half, it's over.
Yeah.
Start of the second half, Oregon doesn't need to play their starters. Do we want to see one quarterback get all the reps at second string, or do you prefer to see a second guy get in there as well, or I guess a third guy if I'm talking correctly, and they maybe rotate so we get a good idea of two quarterbacks and what they have? Or do you want that backup guy to get all the reps?
It's a really good question, Matt, and I've thought a little bit about this. I'd kind of maybe rather see just one guy. And I say that not because I don't want to see the other guy, but if we do just see one guy, that to me means that one guy has separated and there's confidence that that's the long-term player. Now, of course, the caveat there being, does that point to somebody joining, you know, jumping in the transfer portal pretty quickly? Because it's clearly one of the players who gets all the reps. Does that indicate that the competition is not over, but that it's leaning one direction going into 2022? So I would prefer to see one guy. If it's Ty Thompson, get all the reps. If it's Robbie Ashford, get all the reps and just see what they have. Show the confidence. Obviously, you don't open the playbook all the way, but you open it enough where they have an opportunity to go through progressions on passing downs, to actually face a live defense. In a game where the outcome doesn't matter a ton, obviously, you know, you want them to play well. But, you know, if he struggles and throws a pick or the drives don't go great, it's not the end of the world. It doesn't lose you a football game, but where you can make some educated decisions. But if they end up playing two or three guys other than Anthony Brown, and three's probably a huge jump. I don't think they play all four quarterbacks on Saturday. But if that is a thing that happens, that to me leads me to believe that they really are still entrenched in a very serious position battle for this. You know, and that to me, it's not a bad thing, but my preference is that they kind of have a better feel for this already, because Mario seems to indicate that they do.
I would say from a personal perspective, I'd like to see multiple quarterbacks play, just because we haven't been able to look at them. Like, I want to see how Robbie Ashford performs and Ty Thompson, right, and Jay Butterfield, all of them against not their own defense. Like, I think that's the main thing. I want to see how they react live in game, what reads they make, etc. But realistically, if there's a second string quarterback that goes into this game, I think they get all the reps, no matter who it is.
Yeah, I think I fall in line with what Jared is thinking. I want to see all these guys get some kind of a rep, because we just haven't seen them in competition outside of a spring game. But at the same time, the value of getting one guy ready in case Anthony Brown does get hurt or needs to come out for a quarter or what have you, because he is taking hits. I mean, against Fresno State, he ran the ball quite a bit. Against Ohio State, he ran the ball quite a bit. And in both those games, he got hit. And I'd like to see whoever is the true number one. Like, Eric, I think you bring up a good point, too, of is this a true, you know, job that's been won by somebody, or is it still entrenched? That's probably the more important question. But if someone has won this job, you need to get him ready in the event that he needs to play in a bigger game, a more important game than this one in backup mop-up duty. So I'm with you. They need to play one, but I'd love to – it's kind of both answers, but I'd love to see more than one guy after Anthony Brown play, just to know what they have, get some confirmation with our own eyes.
Matt, you do bring up a really good – we'll go back. I know we're moving ahead in our show notes here. I don't want to belabor the point, but I think you bring up a really good point in terms of the style of the way they're running a quarterback. Anthony Brown took some big hits in both those games, especially against Ohio State. He could get hurt. You don't want to see, you know, obviously that's never what you want to happen, but it's possible. And if you're Oregon, I think you just really want to know what you have in case that does happen. Because we talk about, like, it would make sense if you want to see both a bunch of guys playing these games. If you're just thinking 2022 of like, hey, let's really see what these guys have when the bright lights are on and a big, you know, not a big moment, but, you know, on the field against another opponent. How do these guys stack up? It's another thing to say we're preparing for 2021, where if Anthony Brown does go down, we want one of these guys to have a lot of reps. Because you brought up a point in previous podcasts of Tyler Shuck didn't get that much opportunity before he was the starting quarterback. I think you got to learn from that and make sure whoever is your guy has a ton of reps, a ton of opportunity, because you don't want a repeat of what even happened with Braxton Burmeister, where he hadn't had many reps in game at all, and then suddenly he's your starting quarterback for 5 weeks.
Let's move to injuries. I think this is probably one a lot of people are curious about, want to know about. Safe to say none of us expect Kayvon Thibodeau to play in this game, correct? Or are any of you out there crazy enough to say he could potentially play?
Jared, where's your life savings at?
it's gone at this point. But no, I don't expect KT to play. We haven't seen him in pads all week. We've very rarely seen him. And he's been in just, you know, athletic garb with some wrap on his ankle, just looking like he's going through therapy or PT, whatever it is that they do. Haven't seen him come close to being in any type of padding. So I wouldn't expect him to go. They don't need him to go. They don't need him to win. I thought they needed him to win against Ohio State, but that was not true. So I don't expect to see him. I'm not betting anything this time.
Good call. Yeah, Jared's right, though, that we saw him leave practice on Wednesday the last time, and he had a taped ankle, wearing shorts and a T-shirt, probably off to the side getting some low-key work done. Not low-key, but some lighter work done, and I think it would be a huge surprise if he plays.
Justin Flo is out. Cristobal hasn't said he's out for the year, but he has said it's a pretty significant injury. And I think it's fair to say that if Flo does get back on the football field at some point in this season, it's probably going to be in November, possibly even a December game, if that happens. We should note that Kayvon Thibodeau is listed as the starter at the Joker position on the organizational chart. Justin Flo has been removed from the depth chart at the will spot. That's a pretty telling sign that it's a pretty significant injury. Cam McCormick, he is out for the year with an ankle lower leg injury. He has been removed from the depth chart, organizational chart, excuse me, from Oregon as well. Really sad news there. I think he was Oregon's best inline blocking tight end by far. So that's another impact there. And then we've got some other guys that are dealing with injuries. We know Mace Funa left that game against Ohio State with an injury, and the sophomore outside linebacker, I don't think he returned in that game and was seen in a boot afterwards. And then also defensive end Brandon Dorlis was sporting a boot after the game as well, and it's probably questionable to play in this football game as well. So, you know, you could look at this with Kayvon Thibodeau, Brandon Dorlis, Justin Flo, and Mace Funa. This defense could be without four of its 11 starters that were projected to start going into the Ohio State football game.
Before I jump into that, I just want to kind of comment on something I said before with Cam McCormick, where I suggested he might look at a medical retirement. That's not the case. He's already said he's going to give it a go to come back. My fault in kind of jumping the gun on that. I think maybe I was just projecting of like, boy, like if I was faced with this much adversity, I would kind of throw up, you know, I'd probably quit, I guess. He's stronger than I am, clearly, and really impressed that he's going to keep going, because this has been a tough, arduous journey for him. And again, a lot of people, myself included, would have maybe considered not continuing, and he's going to do it. So expect to see him at some point in 2022, it sounds like. So great on Cam, and good news there. It sounds like a torn Achilles is the word there, but should be back hopefully by the 2022 season. And you're right, Matt, in terms of segueing back to what you asked about just kind of the defensive impacts. We don't have clarity on Funa or Brandon Dorlis. Another player who was dinged up a little bit, Keith Brown, expected to start at will linebacker, is on the depth chart. I saw him leaving practice on Wednesday, full pads. Looked like he had gone through a full day of work. I would expect he plays. I don't think that's a huge surprise. Mario, I said it was minimal, but then also didn't he offer up like it might also be a minor strain, which is kind of funky. But yeah. I don't know if that was he didn't know or he was. I don't know. That was interesting. But I think it looks like you can expect Brown to play. I don't think we really know about Funa or Dorlis. I think it's probable that they both try to play in this game, and if they can't go, they can't go. People have been kind of asking, like, would you just straight up sit guys? I don't think you do that. I think that's sort of disrespectful to your opponent, and that's something Mario's really that's kind of a pillar of Mario's, I guess, just philosophy and culture of is respecting your opponent. And if you just sat guys who could play, who are fully healthy, that would be one thing. But if a guy like Ofuna or Adorless is 80%, 70% there, and they get out there and they decide it's not worth it, I can see that taking place too. But I don't think you would sit a guy like who's like 100%. So, but I think we will have to be aware this could be a lot of younger players on defense, which is, again, one of the reasons I brought up earlier. Like, who knows exactly what the score is going to be? Because I'm not saying Oregon's not talented, but Oregon, a lot of these guys who are going to fill in theory, don't have a lot of experience, at least playing with the ones. So, like for a Mace Funa, if he doesn't play, probably got a lot of Trevor Mai. It's probably a lot of Jake Shipley. Maybe you play a little bit more Swinson and Adrian Jackson, which we haven't seen a lot of. It's a little bit undersized, a little bit maybe for in terms of setting an edge on run plays. You know, Brandon Dorlis, if he doesn't play, it's a more Christian Williams, maybe more Jason Jones. Maybe we see a little Suava Pote, who we haven't seen yet. So there's certainly some components there to follow. Regardless, all the names I'm mentioning are going to play on Saturday, I think, because the game script is going to get to the point where Oregon basically empties its bench for most of the second half. That's how I feel it's going to play, at least.
Yeah, I think Mace and Brandon Dorlis probably play, at least in the first half. I don't think either of them are significantly hurt. Like, I think if they were and they were out for a period of time, I think Mario would have came out and said it on either one of his press conferences this week. Yeah, we saw Dorlis leave with a boot in Columbus. But he didn't come into the game with one. Mace was hurt against Fresno State.
Dorlis was also on the field the very last snaps of the game, too. Right. He was the one who downed the knee that was over-reviewed. So it's not like he wasn't playing. It sounds like maybe it was a float.
Exactly.
Came out after.
And I think in the rewatch, Mace did come back in at one point during the second half. Yeah. So I think they'll both play in my opinion, I think they'll both play. I don't think they'll play the full game. I don't think they should, nor will they have to. I think that'll be the time where Mario not doesn't sit them, but limits their participation because of their injury. I am kind of excited to see some of the younger guys on the defensive front, you know, the Brandon Buckners and the players that you mentioned, Eric, you know, Jason Jones, Christian Williams, people like that, to see what they really have. Jones and Williams have actually got a lot of run on the defensive line so far this year. Jones played a lot in the second half against Ohio State. So that'll be something I'd love to watch, just to see who can get off the edge. And continue to see what Braden Swinson and Adrian Jackson and Mace can do off the edge as well without KT once again.
It's going to be interesting with all the injuries. This is certainly one in which probably for the program, the offense would be in an ideal situation to come out and just score on their first five or six drives the game and basically put this game out of reach for Stony Brook early on, so the defense doesn't feel any kind of pressure or stress. Because look, I think if Funa and Dorlas have any kind of injury that by playing could make it worse, like if it's like, hey, like you're going to be able to play at 80%, but you're also potentially able to make the injury worse, I don't think you play him. It's going to have to be one of those like, yeah, he could play on it. It's just going to hurt, but it's not going to get any worse type of a deal. If there's any possibility that the injury leads to further severe injury, then those guys don't play. It's not worth risking that when you have Arizona next week to open Pac-12 play. You have to go down to Stanford the week after that, and then you get a bye week. I'd much rather see these guys sit out this week and maybe play against Arizona. And if they don't play against Arizona, you know, bring them back against Stanford, and then you get a bye week for those guys to kind of recover. But it's long-term thought process. They've got one game to worry about right now. Let's shift to the defensive backfield. DJ James, Jamal Hill, both back against Ohio State, and I thought both guys played pretty well. DJ James in particular is going to provide some flexibility, though, with this secondary. And I know a lot of people are kind of looking at the stats and seeing how many passing yards this defense is giving up the last 2 weeks. And while I don't think any of us on the show are too overly concerned, the return of DJ James should impact how Oregon operates against the passing attack.
Yeah, James was, by the way, one of Oregon's five defensive players of the game as named by the school. So really impressive performance. Was really good in coverage, actually, I thought. Obviously, some yards given up, but that was sometimes Ohio State just connected on pretty dang impressive plays. One of the things Tim DeRuiter said, though, that I found pretty notable when he was asked specifically about DJ was that he thinks with DJ James and Mikhail Wright, they now have two of the best man coverage corners in the country, and that those guys can lock up anybody out there. You look at the remaining schedule, I agree. I think what you'll see going forward is a lot more aggressive, a lot more man-on-man coverage on an island where there isn't necessarily a lot of help, where they don't have, where there are like more exotic blitz packages because of that, where you have guys who are playing nickel or safety who are coming upfield rather than being their, security valve next to them. They're now gone because we think these guys can defend well. And that wasn't a thing that was a smart strategy to employ against Ohio State. You know, point blank, Ohio State's really, really good passing the football. And Oregon gave up one play of more than 40 yards a week after Minnesota gave up like four or five. So Oregon's strategy in that game was what it was. I know fans don't like seeing the stats the way they are. You can go read some articles on DuckTerritory.com or go watch the raw video on YouTube of Tim DeRuiter talking about this. But they had a very clear game plan, and it was don't let them take the top off of the defense. Keep everything in front of you. Make them exert effort on these drives. The more plays you play, the more plays there's an opportunity a young quarterback makes a mistake. And ultimately, I know they gave a bunch of yards. They gave up four scores, but 28 points against Ohio State's really good. And they also forced a turnover at the end of the game to win. So I think going forward, though, you'll see Oregon be in man coverage a lot more often. And that's what they said, at least. I don't know how much we'll see in the next couple of weeks, given the opponent, like how aggressive they want to be. Maybe they just want to just show up and prove they really can dominate. And this will be a game where where there's like no real success at all throwing the ball from Stony Brook. But I think just be noted, I think that's something to be aware of. Fans are, I can tell, frustrated with the passing stats. But just kind of an update as to why maybe don't be too concerned going forward. And even though the stats indicate one thing, the coaches and players thought the defensive backfield played very well in that game. They didn't think it was a game where they got embarrassed. Quite the opposite. From what the game plan was, they gave up almost no yards after catch. Everything was kept in front. And I know that's not necessarily fun football to watch, but it was bend but break out football, and it didn't break enough, and they won.
Yeah, Eric, you put it perfectly there with the bend don't break analogy. I mean, their game plan, we kind of anticipated that their game plan was to let Ohio State, you know, catch in front and then tackle and don't let anybody take the top off. And Drueter admitted, like, that was it. And they did a perfect job on that. If you are just a box score checker and you just look to see what Olave did and Wilson did and CJ Stroud did, you're like, oh, Ohio State, you know, killed Oregon in the passing game. Well, they put up numbers, but, you know, Oregon only was really beat once over the top, and that was, you know, the miscommunication on the sideline with Mykael Wright and a couple other guys. So I think this week, if you're an Oregon fan who's been less than impressed with the defensive backfield, this is a week, next week is a week, and Stanford is probably the most important week of the three to really hone in and watch the secondary go to work. Because now with the addition of DJ James, who won the boundary corner position after his performance against Ohio State, moving Tre'Quest Bridges over to the field corner position with Mykael Wright and putting Dante Manning at a second string, this is an impressive backfield. And with this game this weekend against Stony Brook, you know, there's going to be a lot of other elements, including the weather, that might go into it. But this is going to be the chance for them to shine. You know, I think it's going to be an impressive game put forth by the secondary, all members, and DJ James, Mykael Wright, and in specifics are going to be press coverage, seemingly man on man. They're going to show their talents against some lesser talents. But once we head into Pac-12 play, I think with the lesser wide receiver cores that some of the Pac-12 teams have, they're going to show their talents. It's not going to be another 400-yard game anytime soon, I think, against Oregon's secondary.
Let's go into some game predictions now. I'll start first with offensive team. We'll run through these, and then we'll end with our game picks. I'll start us off with an offensive team prediction. I think with the weather, it's going to be a rainy Saturday in Eugene. It might not be full-on downpour at time of kickoff, but they're expecting 1 to 2 inches of rain to hit the Eugene area between Saturday morning and early Sunday morning. So there could be some downpours, and I think that's going to factor into things a little bit here. So I'm going Oregon with over 300 yards rushing. They score 4 touchdowns, and they have 3 guys that have over 75 yards on the ground.
I did not take weather into account, Matt, because it never rains in Autzen Stadium.
Nice.
And so in fact, Matt's probably right. There probably will be more running, but my prediction was just based upon kind of the way I thought the game would play out, and not really considering the weather. But Oregon had 11 different receivers catch a pass last week. I'm predicting, and again, you can go read mine written on the site on Scopoldamas. I'm recapping those on the show. But the prediction I made was 12 or more different receivers catch a pass, because I actually looked at that and thought there's a lot of opportunity for that to grow in this game. Johnny Johnson and Micah Pittman didn't catch passes in that game, and yet 11 different guys had grabs. I know Cam McCormick was one of those guys. He's no longer available, but I think this game script is going to be a thing where we see a lot of different personnel packages out there. A lot of different players get opportunity. I think we're going to see more Dante Thornton and Isaiah Brevard, and, you know, moving down the depth chart with the receivers. I think we're going to see more running backs available, like Seven McGee, Byron Cardwell, Trey Benson, those names. So I'm picking 12 or more players catch a pass in this game. I think, again, because of the way it's going to play out, it might be a deal where there isn't a receiver with more than 50 yards again. Last week, the leading receiver was CJ Verdell, I think, he had the most receptions. Maybe he didn't have the most yards, but they didn't have a huge receiving stats. I think it's going to be similar this game. No one has big stats in the passing game, but 12 different guys get their hand on the football through passing.
So this is the difficulty in going last. Matt, you and I are on the exact same page here. I had Oregon's rushing attack going for over 300 yards. I wasn't quite as specific with the 4 touchdowns, but I do think that weather is going to play a huge factor into this. Although Yes, it never rains in Autzen Stadium, but it will on Saturday, presumably. So I think Oregon's offensive line is firing on all cylinders. This is a game to just exploit that and go to town on Stony Brook. So I think CJ Verdell, Travis Dye, and hopefully Trey Benson are going to have just a great day at the office.
Offensive individual performance here. I'm going with a backup guy that I don't think has played more than a few snaps, if at all, this season so far. Mm. But Seven McGee is going to have 150 of all-purpose yardage. So that means receiving yards, rushing yards, kickoff return yards, punt return yards. He's going to have 150. I think he's going to score a touchdown too. I'm expecting him to be kind of one of those guys that's – if Oregon's going to have 70 points in this game, it's because a guy like Seven McGee gets a swing pass out of the backfield and is in a one-on-one situation with a poor outside linebacker who has no ability to guard this guy. And he makes a miss and he just runs away for a touchdown. That's how I think if this game does get to just an absurd amount of points from an Oregon perspective, how you get there. You need some of these younger freshmen, younger second, third, fourth string guys who are by far a better athlete than the Stony Brook players to get into open space and just break them. And I think McGee does have one of those in his toolbox.
I like it. I like Seven McGee a lot. I'm really excited. I'll be really curious to see what the game script, by the way, at running back is in terms of what the order is for the non-CJ and Travis players to play. Is it McGee? Is it Benson? Is it Cardwell? How close? I don't think Sean Dollars is available still. I know he's not, but what happens with those guys? I let it slip a little bit, what this was going to be earlier in the show, alluded to it. Ty Thompson, I think, is the second quarterback to play in this game. He replaces Anthony Brown at some point in the second half. I think they give Brown at least the first half to play. I would be surprised if not. But Ty Thompson, second quarterback in, and I think he scores his first touchdown at Oregon, whether that be on the ground or through the air. And that's probably not a huge bold prediction that he's going to score a touchdown leading the offense against this defense. But it's pretty bold just to pick the guy who's going to be the guy. So I think Ty Thompson's the second quarterback on the field, and he plays pretty well.
I went a little meat and potatoes for the individual offense. I got Anthony Brown scoring 5 total touchdowns, 3 passing, 2 rushing. So I think he's going to carry the bulk of the offense. I think there's going to be I think Oregon's going to take a lot more shots deep against Stony Brook. They just have the explosive wide receivers on the edge compared to Stony Brook's defensive backs. I think Anthony Brown's going to get it down in the red zone and knock it in himself a couple times. I've been really pleased with how offensive coordinator Joe Moorhead has used Anthony Brown in the rushing attack. Brown's physicality and his deceptive quickness, I think, has intrigued me a lot. I think that's going to be used all throughout the season and especially going to be exploited against Stony Brook.
All right, let's now move over to defensive team. I don't think Stony Brook's very good. They're 1-1 on the year. I think the stat is 171-24 and then their last 4 games against FBS opponents, they've been outscored. I think Stony Brook has fewer than 250 yards of total offense in this football game. Oregon's defense, even with its injuries, even with guys being limited, second, third string guys coming out of this one, taking into account for the weather here a little bit as well, I think Stony Brook has less than 250 yards of total offense.
We haven't done a lot of talking about Stony Brook at all and what their team is like, so I'm going to do a little bit of that and then get to the point here. The offense for Stony Brook does not want to throw the football regularly. In their first game, Tyquil Fields, their quarterback, attempted 43 passes, 2 were picks. He only completed 21 of them. They got blown out. They lost 40-21, I think. Next week, against Colgate, they win 24-3. He only throws it 11 times, throws a touchdown. That's clearly the way they want this to go. I say that because I think there's going to be a lot of turnovers in this game, because I think Fields, even at the FCS level, is throwing if he has to throw the ball around the yard 43 times, he's already throwing picks. And Oregon's secondary is a lot better than that. I just don't think he's going to have anywhere to go with the ball. And the way the game is going to play out, I don't think they're going to be competitive early, and I think they're going to be forced to just throw the ball a lot. And because of that, I'm predicting 4 turnovers I think one's a pick six or a fumble for a touchdown. The Oregon defense has shown now through 2 weeks to be much more opportunistic than last year's defense. Last year's defense, I don't know if people remember this, the specifics, 7 forced turnovers in 7 games a year ago. They already have forced, I think, 4 through 2. I think they're going to have 4 turnovers forced in this game, and I think one goes for a score. And I wouldn't be surprised if it's more than 4. I think this could be sloppy for Stony Brook. Again, their quarterback is a good dual threat guy. He can run. He's effective running the football. He might make some plays with his legs that surprise you, but he's not a great passer.
Yeah, I'm kind of in between both of you guys on this one. I have Stony Brook going for less than 150 yards in passing offense with 2 interceptions. I think this is the, you know, we kind of alluded to it earlier. I did specifically where Oregon's defensive backs really step up and show why you shouldn't be extremely worried about Oregon's secondary. You know, they went from playing Ohio State to now playing Stony Brook. I think that their talent's going to translate, and I think Stony Brook's going to have a really hard time moving the ball.
Okay, defensive individual prediction here. Because Kayvon Thibodeau is not going to play in this game, or we expect him not, because I think Oregon is going to dominate the line of scrimmage, and that's going to create some third and long situations, and even probably some second and long, like 12 or 13-yard situations. I think Braden Swenson is going to have 2 sacks or more in this football game. He's going to force at least 1 fumble, and he's also going to have at least 1 pass deflection. I think Braden Swenson is going to just straight up dominate off the edge for Oregon in this game.
Love it. Sorry, I swallowed some water a second ago. My throat is I might be talking.
Can't give you CPR through the screen here, Eric.
Well, you don't drink water on these podcasts, right, Matt? That's what you always tell me.
Yes.
But I like to drink water because my throat gets sore. Anyway, no, I was going to say, I think you look at Stony Brook, and I just don't know if they're going to be very good. And because of that, I think Oregon plays a lot of defensive players. And my prediction is that a true freshman leads the team in tackles. I think Keith Brown is probably the leader in the clubhouse for that, filling in as a starter. In fact, I was thinking about this yesterday. Keith Brown's going to basically have a full year as a starter this year. I mean, assuming he stays healthy, I'm knocking on wood now because that group needs him to desperately. But if he stays healthy, he's their full-time starter. So I think I wouldn't be surprised if he's the one who leads the team in tackles. If it's not him, I could see it being one of those other freshmen who are filling in at the will spot, the Jeffrey Bosses or the Jabril McNeils, maybe or Brandon Buckner. But I'm predicting a true freshman to lead the team in tackles because I think a lot of guys are going to play. And you could see a situation where through one half, Noah Sewell has the team lead at 5 tackles. But in the second half, somebody fills in and gets 6 or 7 just because they're out on the field a lot. So a true freshman leads the team in tackles.
I have Noah Sewell leading the team in tackles. I think he's going to play just a little bit more than everybody expects just because of the linebacker, like how thin they are at all positions. I have him going for 10 tackles, at least 10 tackles, 1 sack and 1 interception. I think he's going to, you know, just luckily be dropping back at the right time and in the right area where the quarterback doesn't see him. Going to put it in his chest, basically. I think this could be just a really bad day if you're playing for Stony Brook and having to go against Noah Sewell. I do not envy that person, whoever it may be. So I see him having a great defensive day.
Let's look at the game predictions from a score perspective now. I do think Oregon's going to run the football effectively. Their defense is going to be stout against a really bad Stony Brook offense, the team that, like Eric said, wants to run the football. I think that plays right into Oregon's strengths, even with the injuries accounted for. So I think this game gets out of hand. I do think we're going to see a pretty vanilla offense from Oregon. They're going to take their shots down the field, but I think more of Oregon's big plays will be the result of one-on-one situations in the flat or in the short immediate pass game, that a guy makes a defender miss and he goes for a big gain or he goes for a touchdown. I don't think Oregon's going to be hucking the ball, you know, through the air 20 or 30 yards a ton in this contest. Give me Oregon 56, Stony Brook 13.
Every week, Yeah, this is killing me, man. Because I come up with this, and I think about it, and I plan it all out, and then you predict the same score almost. I have 55-13. So it looks like I'm copying you, but I swear, that's what I'd written it down. I have proof of it on my phone. I wrote it down last night at like 10 o'clock what my score was going to be. And then that comes out. Actually, before that, because we were planning on doing the show earlier. But no, anyway, I had a score, and you come out every time. Anyway.
I feel like I've struck a nerve here for a little bit.
It's incredible how you do this every time. I guess we've been doing the show for a while, so I mean, clearly have similar opinions how the game's going to play out. Yeah, I think a lot of young guys play. I think Oregon gets up big early. I think it's going to be probably a 5-touchdown lead at half. Maybe it gets crazy and it's 6 if things get really crazy. But I think they're going to score a lot, and I don't think Stony Brook will score much. In fact, I think the 13 points there, it's 2 field goals and a touchdown. I could see that touchdown coming late against a lot of reserve defensive players. I think Oregon's top defensive group, which again includes now because of injury, a lot of reserve guys. I think that top group basically keeps Stony Brook from moving the ball all game. And that the least points scored are probably against the lesser group. I'm not saying it's going to be a shutout when all the first string guys leave, because maybe there's a field goal or two, but I think you're going to come away really impressed with the defense, and Oregon's offense does plenty to get to 55 points, and 55-13 feels like a really solid margin. I think, you know, I think if you're frustrated coming away expecting more, that's kind of on you. You know, you're not going to win very many games the way they did in 19 against Nevada, where they won 77-6. And Nevada's better than Stony Brook, but you're just that a lot of things broke right that day. And I just don't think 77-6 is probably what we're going to see. So I think 55-13 feels like a pretty good margin.
The 56 and 55 points seems too high for me. I can't get into the 50s with Oregon, especially with the weather and the fact that I think they're going to be up big at half, just like you said, Eric, and then put in the second and third stringers. And I don't anticipate that going as swimmingly as, you know, with the first team out there. So I have Oregon winning 42-13. It's still going to be a blowout. I agree with you, Eric, where Stony Brook probably scores a touchdown in the second half when Oregon's first stringers aren't on the field, or they score like on the first drive of the game. And it's like, oh, is this going to be a close one? It won't. I think Oregon's going to handle this just fine. You know, we've been talking about it all week. The spread is 42 points. I don't think they cover. But getting up to the 50s and near 60, I just don't see it happening.
Eric, just to pour more salt on your wounds, before this show started, I was going to predict like a 42-13 victory for Oregon, but I kind of convinced myself that a swing pass or two or a big run where Seven McGee or Trey Benson kind of makes one defender miss and is gone. I think that happens a couple times. And that got me to my score. So just to pour a little more salt in the wounds, I was leaning before the show actually started. I had on my notes on my computer a 42-13 victory for Oregon. So I convinced myself to bump it up a little bit. I'll regret that.
So Matt, you decided to steal my score rather than Jared's score.
Yes.
You could have taken Jared's score, but you took mine instead. I see. Okay. Works.
100%. All right. That's going to do it for us here on the Odds and Audibles podcast. Thank you for listening to the show. Thank you for checking us out on duckterritory.com. Next time you will hear from us will be either late Saturday night, early Sunday morning for our post-game reactions from this game. Remember to check out that show as well. And until then, you've been listening to the Odds and Audibles podcast.
Talk to you later, folks.
Peace.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.